if you can get through, I want you to share some of your botched surgery stories with me. I mean, this Joan Rivers story is unbelievable. Dead, age of 81. We had that story yesterday. Just a very sad, sad story. I mean, she loses her life after having minor elective throat surgery. She goes into cardiac arrest and respiratory arrest, and then she dies. My gosh. Truly unbelievable. I've got a friend of mine. He's an ophthalmologist. He lives here in St. Louis. About a year and a half or 2 years ago, he decided he wanted to go in for a colonoscopy, right? He was at that age. The doctor said, you got to do this. So he goes in and he has a colonoscopy, right? His friend is the doctor who does the procedure because he's a doctor. He's a medical doctor. He's an ophthalmologist, doctor of the eyes. They puncture his colon. But I don't think they really know that they punctured it at the time, right? So they're done with the colonoscopy, that's it, right? He gets an incredible infection. He then has to go back, and what do? They open him up and remove his intestine, and then they bathe it for a couple days to try to, like, disinfect it, because it's loaded with bacteria. And he's, like, cut wide open. They then put the intestine back in, sew him up. In the process, the guy gets a hernia. He goes in for another operation, and they put this mesh on him. And off he goes again. I mean, he's sickly because of the intestine being taken out. Looks horrible. There's then a recall on the mesh. So they got to go in and take that out. All because the guy wanted to go in and just get a routine colonoscopy. Unbelievable. So share some of those stories with us, if you would. I mean, I'm curious to see how often that happens. And then we'll be back with the rest of your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to another hour of Open Lines. I'm choking. Let's go to Mark in Yuba City, California. Hey, Mark, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. How you doing? I'm so glad to talk to you.
I'm glad you got in.
I wanted to tell you a little bit about I was in LPT about a few years ago, and I was in a hospital, and I actually saw a lady have a mastectomy, and the doctor was pouring hydrogen peroxide over the area where he removed the breast, and I asked him why he was doing that, and he said the hydrogen peroxide kills cancer cells, which I was never aware of.
Huh. I don't know if it kills cancer cells, but it sure is good for infection, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's what he said at the time. Anyways, I wanted to share something with you, something that happened to me twice in my life, and I wanted to know if you've ever heard of this happening to anybody else. When I was 11 years old, I became a Christian, and I'd asked Jesus to come into my heart, and I had a lot of things happen to me after that. But I went to a Bible study, and I was sitting there, and a man walked into the room with a leg shorter than the other. And as I was sitting there, I heard a voice in my head tell me that he was going to go ahead and kill that man. And I just said, okay, because I was 11 years old, and nobody else seemed to hear the voice but me. But anyways, I felt something like I saw black lightning, but it wasn't in my physical self. It was in my spiritual self. I saw like a black lightning bolt. I felt the power come out of me and go into that man. And I saw his leg come out, and he was healed instantly. And the guy started jumping up and down, praising God for his healing. Well, that was the first time I ever heard the voice. The second time was when I was about 23 years old. I was walking down the street, and there was a man walking towards me that I knew. Well, anyways, the same voice came to me again and told me that the man, his mother was in the hospital, he had an infection, and that she was near death, and I needed to talk to him. And so anyways, I went and I approached him, and I started talking to him about the voice that I heard in this situation. And he goes, how did you know that? I never told you that what's happening to my mother. And he was, anyways, I got to talk to him, and I encouraged him, and he felt a lot better afterwards. But have you ever heard of that happening to anybody else?
Yeah, it has happened to a lot of people, believe it or not, Mark. They have this epiphany. Something happens to them. You call it, encounter with Jesus. Some other people would say it's just something that just happens to them. But it is an incredibly powerful thing when it does happen. We've got Jack in Miami, and now he's on Coast to Coast. Jack, go ahead. Jack, you with us?
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Here you are. Good.
First of all, before I go any further, my best wishes to you and your family, sir.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate that.
No. And you, and sincerely, I mean it. My best wishes. I wanted to, on a lighter facet, to say on things, I wanted to reflect on an observation you made a while back, sir.
Okay.
You were speaking about the turn of events in both Russia and China and how things were going. And if I remember correctly, you vaguely mentioned, if I remember correctly, Oliver Williams and John Deere, that you might have them back. Would you consider that a possibility someday?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, we've got a request in with Oliver right now.
Oh.
So as soon as he says yes, he's on.
My next question to you is, what do you think of the 2036 timeline, sir, and how that is working out in terms of how, and I'm not saying it is, because believe me, I don't know these things that you do, but what I'm saying is you made reference to it and you made me think about it, and I thought that was a very tangible observation you made. So what do you think? I mean, is there a timeline 2036 kind of sort of maybe coincidence?
There might be. Let's assume for a moment that time travel in the future is possible. That John Teeter, the would-be time traveler from 2036, comes back. Apparently, he came back because he needed some old IBM computer parts. But if there's time travel in the future, and 2036 is not that far away anymore, believe me. But let's say they develop time travel, and he does come back. So there's possibility number one. And then all the things that he has said, the possibility of civil war and this, I think all that's possible, too. It really is. And then I could get back to the interview I did with Larry Haber, who the family apparently hired, the John Teeter family. Apparently John Teeter he's not a little boy anymore. He must be about 16 years old in real life now. But they hired a lawyer in Florida. He's a real lawyer. I interviewed him years ago, and he had Teeter's mother on the phone. She didn't want to go on the air, but he interviewed her for me, and we got answers from her. That's a bizarre story, too. But John Teeter of the future is gone. Nobody knows where he is. But Oliver Williams is the person who kept the JohnTeeter.com website alive, and I've been trying to get Oliver on now for some time, and we just really can't get him to commit yet, but we're working on it. He used to come on all the time. Maybe he's given up. Let's go to Clovis, California. Andrew's with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Andrew. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Good. What's going on?
Yeah, I have a horror story, a medical horror story.
What happened?
Kind of tied into what you're going through. I mean, I can hear it in your voice, and that's the same thing that happened to me. I lost some family members right after the other, and I wake up one morning, and I have this sensation like I'm either having an asthma attack or a heart attack. I was a little bit terrified because of what had happened to my cousin and my father.
Sure.
And so I call the ambulance. Oh my God, I'm having trouble breathing. You know, I'm out of it. I'm delirious. I'm like bouncing off the walls, right?
Yeah, and it's getting worse. It's like a panic attack, probably, I would think.
Yeah. That, you know, years later, I think that's what it was. But at the time, I didn't know. So, I call the ambulance. They take me, in the ambulance. I get to the hospital. I'm delirious, in and out of consciousness. I just remember the doctor saying, you've got a horrible blockage in your lung, and just, we need to go in. That's kind of basically what I remember, right?
Oh, geez.
And, I wake up, I'm in and out of consciousness again, I'm delirious, and I wake up, and a couple weeks later, I said, yeah, man, you were almost gone, we saved you, just hang in there, keep fighting. Anyway, eventually, about 3 weeks later, I get out, and they put me on some medication. You've got to go on this medication to, help you recover, all that stuff, right? I just start developing symptoms like I've got the bubonic plague. I mean, like throwing up, just, just horrible, right? I go back in, And here's the really horrible part about it. The doctor says to me, well, first of all, he's like, this medication they put you in, as you're going in, you know, to outpatient or whatever, he's like, you're allergic to it, and you're having a reaction to it, and there's too much of a dosage anyways. You know, so that's the first problem. So second of all, what happened to you? Why did you have the surgery? And I explained to him what happened. He says, I went back and looked at your charts and looked at the x-rays. He says, I didn't see anything wrong with you. There was a haziness in the x-rays. Like, and that happens from time to time. I don't see any reason to operate on you.
Oh, my God.
And I was just like, you got to be kidding
me. Did they cut you open for nothing?
Pretty much, yeah. And, of course, you know, here's the funny part. For me, I've got symptoms that have carried over afterwards. Kind of very similar to what you described with your friend.
Yeah.
You know, and even now, as I was trying to call, you know, I was like trying to do things with my hands quickly when I'm shaky. And, you know, it's like I've got, you know, I don't know, MS or something, right? And, you know, to even bring it up to the hospitals or try to decide whether I got legal action or whatnot, you know, their reaction is like, well, you had surgery, and also you could just be suffering from panic attacks. Now, so there's really nothing we could do for you. We can't claim,
jeez,
you know.
Well, you know, if this second doctor will back you up, you do have some legal recourse here. I mean, big legal recourse.
Yeah, that's just something, you know, I'm going to follow up with. But, yeah, that's my horror story. And real quick before I go, Jordan, I just want to say, you know what, condolences to your family. And I've listened for years, so I know what you've gone through with your dad and, you know, with your sister now. And I went through something very similar. And, you know, you're a man's man. I mean, I would not be able to talk about this stuff. You know, I'm trying to hold it together right now thinking about it. So to have to do what you do, you know, much love, respect to you, and condolences, and, you know, more power to you.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that. I think this program helps me. It keeps me stronger. I've had my moments. It hit me yesterday when I was in my car, and, you know, it's still there, and it's always going to be there. It never goes away. You do have some legal action there, Andrew, I think. You know, they cut you open, and there was nothing wrong with you. Maybe it was just a little panic attack. If you ever watch Breaking Bad, you better call Saul. You need a lawyer like that who's going to be all over him. Let's go next to Joe in Pollock Pines, California. Joe, welcome to the program. Go ahead.
Wow, George, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller and actually a first-time listener as of about an hour and a half ago.
Well, how did this happen?
Well, I did a late-night delivery running ice over at the Auburn County Fair. And I felt like the interviewer having the time on the phone with Giovanni, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Giovanni Lordi.
Yeah, I felt like it was totally geared toward me. It was very strange. It just came in, you know, searching around, right on. I've been listening to a little AM radio. It's very insightful. And I came across your program, and I can't believe I've never listened to you before. I mean, it's things I'm totally interested in. But anyway, on the subject of the lucid dreaming, it's been happening to me as from a young age, actually. And once it happens to you, it seems to occur more and more once you're somewhat in tune to it.
Right. And it is an amazing thing once you get into it.
It is very amazing. And when I talk to, you know, especially my buddies who are under the influence or some, not by any means whatsoever. And one thing I believe very truly is when you feel that you're somewhat not in control of your life, things are in disarray, what have you, things that your guests brought up very much, you know.
Well, I got to tell you, Joe, let me tell you this, and then I'm almost at the break here. And I'm glad you're a first-time listener, so stay with us. When you're in your lucid dreaming state and you know you're in a dream, if it's a dream that could help you in your career or in a relationship or anything, you can change the outcome. You can make that happen. You can flip that. It truly is just a remarkable, remarkable thing. And I do it too. I mean, the dream state is a powerful state. I've done things in my dreams in terms of wanting to accomplish things and goals that are unbelievable. And you go to sleep thinking about it, and poof, it works. It really works. You know, and again, talking about botched surgeries and things, oh, my gosh. I mean, I've interviewed people who went in for surgery, and the doctor left the scalpel in their chest. Unbelievable. Or the cotton gauze that they used to kind of mop up the blood. They've left that inside. They have to go back and open it up. Got a friend of mine, his brother, needed a new aorta. And so they gave him an artificial one from a cow. Well, they gave him a cow's aorta. And then they gave him a pig's valve for his valve. And apparently they didn't do it right. They had to go back in and open him up again. They ended up opening him up three times. Three times. He's alive. He's holding on, but it's amazing. It's amazing. But welcome to the show, Joe. Let's go to Diane in Everett, Washington. Hey, Diane, take it away.
Hey. Born on the 4th, like you. Okay. 9/11. During that week that 9/11 happened, there were a lot of celebrities on. Who knew people on the planes. And I wonder, George, have you ever heard the story that Dan Aykroyd told on television?
Which one was that?
Okay, then let's go into it. I don't remember the host, but he told of the fact that Dan Aykroyd, he's very spiritual and
yes,
a medium. And his very, very best friend was on one of the planes that hit the tower. And that best friend was Tony Perkins, wife of Anthony Perkins.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a photographer. She was a photographer, and she was coming home. And it's reported that she managed to make a call to their son on the plane. But anyway, Dan Aykroyd went on to tell the story. He said that he was grieving so bad for his friend. She was just the dearest friend he had, his very best friend, and in horrible, deep grief about it. And he said then one night she came to him, and she looked just as beautiful as ever, and she told him, and this may help all of you, she told him that her job was, and she was helping all of the ones cross over who were having a hard time with what happened to them in 9/11. And that was her job, and she was fine, and for him not to worry about her. And he told that host, this is the last time, he said, I've only told this story once, and I will never tell it again.
That's a great story.
Incredible story.
It is. And, you know, I lost an uncle by marriage. You can Google him. Douglas Gowell, G-O-W-E-L-L. He was on flight 175 that hit one of the towers. And he was on his way to Los Angeles. He was working for Avid, which was a computer editing company. And he picked that fateful day to get on that plane. We're going to come back. More open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's time for our traditional shout-out. Those of you supporting Coast to Coast AM, and gosh, it continues to grow bigger and bigger. Those of you listening to your favorite radio stations across North America, we are approaching, now North America, close to 600 stations now. Absolutely amazing. Coast Insiders, thank you for what you do. And if you want to sign up to be a Coast Insider, like some of our new listeners, you can podcast the past 3 years of shows, and we're working on maybe more. Sirius XM, Indie Channel 102. And then how about the various chat rooms and groups that are out there? Imaginative Worlds, Into Infinity, the National Radio Club, the Sorcery IRC groups, the Yahoo Chatters, the Northern Kentucky Paranormal Group, the Omega Point Chronicles group, the SoCal UFO Meetup group, the Fantastic Forum 2 groups, the Hollywood Ghost Hunters, and you got to say thanks to our buddy Greg the Cook in St. Louis. Greggy, thanks for supporting Coast to Coast AM. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Open lines for you. I kind of like this every once in a while. 3 hours of open lines. It's kind of cool. Let's go to Robin in Nashville, Indiana. Hi, Robin. What's going on?
Hi. I heard you tell about your friend with the abdominal surgeries, and I had a very similar experience. I've had 8 abdominal surgeries.
Oh, my gosh.
It started with the first one and then problems afterwards. I have 2 of those Kugel patches in me that are recalled, but I refuse to give them back because they tell me it'd be at least a 1-year recovery, so they're in me and they're not, they're not leaving unless it's an emergency. But I had, during the second surgery, they discovered that my liver and my stomach had adhered to each other and they had to cut them away. Well, I crashed in ICU and I had, I guess you'd call it out of body experience. I remember all the medical people, alarms going off, all the medical people coming in and watching this from above my body. And to me, all I kept thinking was, you know, why is everybody rushing around? Well, evidently I'd gotten a bleeder from separating the liver and I was crashing. And they were preparing the surgical suite for me. They brought me in to get a CAT scan. And all of a sudden I stabilized on my own. But I remember talking to a voice that was God asking me if I wanted to come or wanted to stay. And I had a 2-month-old granddaughter, and I said, I want to stay and watch her grow up. And all of a sudden, I stabilized. And that was the second surgery. I think it was the 6th surgery.
Oh, my God.
I had enough scar tissue by then. They wanted to bring in a plastic surgeon. And this was a plastic surgeon in New York that does surgery to the stars in a hospital that caters to the stars. And they lost me coming out of recovery for 2 hours. I mean, physically put me in a room and forgot about me.
They didn't know where you were.
No. I woke up with 250 stitches and no anesthesia.
Oh.
So, but I would tell your friend, after all these surgeries, you really check his B12 level, his iron level, and liquid vitamins.
In your case, did they always go in through the same incision, or are there new openings on you?
They did the same incision 5 times, and then finally I went to a different surgeon. They managed to do it laparoscopically, and that was the last time I was breaking open hernias, and that was the last time when they got it laparoscopically and they put that patch in. That's the last time they had to open me up. That's why I won't let them take the patches out.
If it's holding on for you and working, so be it.
Can I tell you a quick my experience at the World Trade Center prior to 9/11?
Yeah, I'd like to hear that.
I worked for a company in New York that sold building materials, and we deliver at night to Manhattan. And the contracts are very strict. The companies would fax over the list of what they want. I would type it into the computer. Mm-hmm. We'd bring a ticket out to the yard foreman. He'd load the trucks, and then whoever did the ticket would go out and count, make sure everything exactly was on the truck. Because if you missed a box of screws, it could be a $500 fine according to the contract.
Wow.
And I normally was not the person that went into Manhattan with the drivers to count the loads with wherever they dropped it off. But one night, that guy called in sick, and I got to go. And it happened to be to the World Trade Center. And this would be the late 90s, 99 maybe, 98. And the loading dock was underneath the building. We wait our turn. We get into the loading dock. And who is the construction foreman but a guy that looked like he could have stepped out of Kandahar, Afghanistan. A little, dressed in a little mufti outfit. And the entire crew was Muslim. And I walked up to him with the clipboard, and I said, okay, let's count this. He would not count the load with a woman. He just turned his back to me, would not talk to me.
Strange.
Finally, the driver that was with me took the clipboard out of my hand and stuck it in the guy's face and either said, count the load or sign it. And this guy would rather sign for whatever was on that truck than count it with a woman. And the World Trade Center was an exoskeleton building. Those narrow windows were because the floor was J-hooks holding up the floors to the outside buildings,
mm-hmm.
and it was a condo. I mean, we were sending in sheetrock, steel studs, all of that. So these people were remodeling different offices over, you know, a period of years. And you know how they say they found traces of superthermite on the...
Yes, that's right.
My husband was ranger in SF for almost 21 years. That stuff supposedly, and I've asked some other buddies of his too, that stuff could have been painted on over a 7 or 8 year period. What was it, 8 years between the first bombing and the second hit. These guys could have had the plans for the World Trade Center, and as they remodeled each office over the years, painted that on the frames before they covered it with the sheetrock, and we would never have known it. The security,
wow.
And I think that's what the government is covering up. I don't think, you know, we were behind it. I think the fact that it was such an intelligence failure that we allowed this to happen, I think that's what they're covering up.
Unbelievable. What a great story. Robin, thanks, and I'm glad you're doing better after 6 botched surgeries. Jeez. Let's go next to Jack in Troy, Ohio. Hey, Jack, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call, George. I'd like to make a few comments here about ISIS, and if you bear with me for just a minute, I can elaborate. But
sure.
ISIS stands for Islamic State, Iraq, and Syria. And the word ISIS is an English word, is an English acronym, and the word also sounds a lot like crisis. Just put the letter CR right in front of ISIS, and you get the word crisis. My question is why would a group of foreigners who don't speak English, who don't speak our language, choose an English surname or acronym to describe or call themselves? They speak a totally different language from us, and it is very unlikely that any group of foreign people would ever use or give themselves an English title or surname. I'm not excusing or dismissing anyone's actions or dismissing them altogether. I do believe they are a threat, but I question the nature of the threat. I'm just simply stating an inference which leaves credence or the very possibility that this is yet another contrived, quote-unquote, boogeyman to keep us in fear and to further erode our freedoms and to keep us in a state of panic and fear, bringing us deeper into yet another war which is made up or, quote-unquote, pumped up, a fake threat or a false flag. Everybody out there can believe what they choose, but all I'm saying is please keep your ears and eyes open, be aware, be awake, be vigilant. And by the way, just 2 more points to make. The LAX shooter from earlier this year, his name was Paul Ciencia. But if you spell that out, Ciencia is spelled C-I-A-C-I-A. That's just food for thought. And one more comment is the news media is really talking down to us, because I heard on NBC the other day that they said the Fort Hood shooter wrote a letter to ISIS to join ISIS. Now, the Fort Hood shooter is, I'm an officer and I'm on duty right now, and I used to work in the prison system. The Fort Hood shooter is most likely in solitary confinement, where he gets out for maybe 1 hour, 2 hours a day. He doesn't have access to a television or probably even to a radio. But the fact that the Fort Hood shooter supposedly wrote a letter to join ISIS in itself is crazy. So my question that I'm posing is, does ISIS now have a P.O. box or an address? And what address would that be? Would that address be 123 Santa Claus Lane at the North Pole? And furthermore, if we buy the fact that ISIS has got a mail drop box now, who would be in charge of delivering that letter? So it's all contrived. And those are my comments.
Well, you got that. I don't think they have a P.O. box, but you're right. If he's going to write a letter, where does it go? The Fort Hood shoot, of course, there's been a couple episodes there, one this year, but there was one in 2009, and that's the big one there, where 13 people got killed, 30 others were wounded when Hassan, that's his name, he was arraigned by the courts in 2011, charged with 13 counts of premeditated murder. But in terms of the name ISIS, I don't know if we gave it to them or if they did. You know, maybe it's, you know, an acronym for something Arabic. I'm not sure. whether they did it and came up with it or not. If they did, it would be weird that they'd come up with a English verbiage instead of Arabic, to be sure. Next up, we go to Anthony in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Anthony, it's your turn.
Yes, sir. My condolences. You and I have something related. My sister died at 48 with a brain tumor. She was number 7 in the whole world that had this particular tumor.
What? How long ago was that?
That was about 5 years ago.
Right. Did she use a cell phone a lot?
No, not really.
Okay.
I think she used a lot of fertilizer, a lot of fertilizer in the grass.
Huh.
But she always used heavy fertilizer, and I told her to be careful with that. But anyway, doctors from India kept her alive for 2.5 years because they knew this particular tumor. And she was able to go home a few times, and then she went into a coma like you. And
same thing.
I went to Minneapolis, and she died in my arms. So I was called to go by her side because she was a born-again Christian.
Yeah.
And I just whispered in her ear. I says, "Just let him take you. You're done here. You cannot, you can't go anymore." So it's a blessing. And everybody calling you, we're praying for you. So you're definitely prayed up for all this.
Thank you.
And I wanted to talk about Muhammad Atta real quick. I lived in Hollywood, Florida, and I went to school up in New York. And the rumor of New York at the time in April of 2000, one was they're going to come to take planes and shove them in these buildings. And I said, "Who is the terrorist star?"
Who told you that?
This was the person I went to school for telecommunications. I go, "Where'd you hear this?" They go, "We know they tried with the vans and it failed. Now they're going to use planes." This is what he was telling me. This is what the rumor of New York City was. So
well, that's pretty good rumor, wasn't it?
Yes, leaving there and then going back to Hollywood, what's the odds of running into these people? See, I'm ex-military.
Uh-huh.
I was in the Middle East. I had the Israelis show me what to do, how to spot out energy, people acting really strange,
yep.
Body language. I saw that in Hollywood, and I saw Muhammad Atta with the second guy in charge with the goatee, with the glasses. Once you've seen this, your hair goes up in the back of your head. And I would see them so often that they would double look at me, thinking I'm following them. And they were all up and along down the beach here from Fort Lauderdale to Deerfield Beach. I've seen them dressed in the blue Afghan woman dress with the screen over the face.
Yeah.
And that's how he hid himself, because he had two little air boys in civilian clothes while they're walking down the beach. And I worked on the phone system on the beach at Deerfield Beach, and this guy was Indian descent from Canada. He goes, "I think we have terrorists here." I go, he goes, "Take a look." I went, "Yeah, that's odd to have this woman walking in blue and cover with two little boys in American clothes." But the woman was very tall and the hands were big. And I said, I think that's a guy underneath that.
Yeah. Geez, that's amazing.
And then you see them down on Hollywood Beach in a circle with Muhammad Atta in the center. And I just had this energy. And then the day I turned the news on and I seen the planes go in, I just went numb. So I was allowed to see something wicked.
You sure were.
It's almost like you're breathless. You can't say anything to anybody because you didn't know who you're talking to. It was very scary back at that time.
Let me ask you this, Anthony. Based on the rumors you heard, and apparently it was all over the place, do you think we botched that?
I think they were so close to us that you do have a wicked side in our government, because our Heavenly Father tells us, "You will see these signs come before I return." So that's what was kept in my mind. So I prayed, "Please keep me safe, but keep me aware of what my surroundings are." And I would see these things, and I would try to explain it to somebody. They would look at me like I was weird. But I've witnessed so much. I'm lucky I'm alive right now.
Oh my God.
I still look over my shoulders.
You stick around, because if they ever have a new investigation, you need to testify. It's a remarkable story. Johnny's in Knoxville, Tennessee. Johnny, let's get you in before the break. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing, man?
Good, Johnny. Thank you.
I'd like to give you my condolences also with everybody else.
Thank you. Appreciate
I actually
it.
Heard a talk show host that was actually talking about the power grid, so I just want to say good job, man. It's actually getting around a lot better.
We're not going to stop.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I wouldn't either, man. It's a dire situation, especially with everything that's going on. I want to tell you a quick story real fast that happened with my aunt, if you got just a minute real quick.
Yep, I sure do.
Okay. Well, my aunt, she was into a lot of Ouija board, a lot of witchcraft and stuff like that. And it was her and another woman. Well, what happened at this particular time, they went to an event, kind of like an Apple event, an Apple fair. And they was walking up to the bathroom. Well, the friend that she was with, she was into a bunch of Wicca, and she was into a bunch of different kind of witchcrafts and stuff like that. Well, as they was walking up to the bathroom, they turned around and they looked back, and they seen this little girl swinging, and the dad was pushing her, and it was in a top of a park. Well, as they was walking, they never noticed anything weird about it, so they turned around. By the time they turned back around, they got a little ways up, and she was telling me this story, and she's got some awesome stories about this stuff. But she turns around, and there's an old woman sitting on the swing, and she's swinging the exact same swing. And they continue. They look back, and she said they freak out, and they kind of take off walking a little faster. So they get on up toward the bathroom. The bathroom is sitting on top of this hill. They turn around again. The little girl's sitting there swinging, and her dad's pushing her. Well, they take off running a little faster. By the time they get to the top, they turn around. The old woman is back on the swing, getting off the swing, taking off after them. So they take off running, and they go through this huge crowd of people. And by the time they're going through this huge crowd of people, they're trying to run from this old lady. They take off, get inside their car, and as they're taking off inside the car comes to a halt, and the floorboard inside of the car starts rising. And as it starts rising up, it's kind of like bubbling up, and you can see. And she had her Ouija board. She had all of her crystals, her Wicca stuff that she used inside the car. Well, she threw every bit of that stuff out, touched the floorboard, and started praying. And at that time, when she started praying, that floorboard started receding back down. And everything completely quit.
Johnny, she had the demons coming after her, let me tell you. Another hour to go of open lines in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM.